And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're welcome along to the 9 to noon show here in Highland Radio for this Tuesday, the 7th of May. It's 9:05 and you're very welcome along. Hopefully you had a nice weekend for those of you who were off, and if you were working, hopefully that went well for you too. We're here to keep you company for the next 3 hours, and of course we want you on board listening and getting involved in the conversation. If you want to WhatsApp and text us, the number hasn't changed since the last time we spoke to you. It is of course 086 60 25 000. That's from inside the Republic. If you want to text from outside or WhatsApp from outside, just add the dialing code 00353. If you want to give us a call, it's 07491 25 000, and emails from wherever you are, plain and simple, comments@highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the show, you can hop on to YouTube. If you're at home and you want to watch on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, we're on YouTube. Just type in Highland Radio Ireland. Already joining us on Facebook is Pedro, watching live and clear inside Indianapolis. Dolores is watching us from her garden, apparently. And Annie is just watching us. Good to have you all on board Facebook. It's Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport. If you want to watch there as well. Right, OK, let's have a run through the newspapers this morning, and we'll start with the Irish Times. And an awful situation, potentially, well, not potentially, it's almost inevitable, unfolding in Rafah. Hamas has said it has broadly accepted a proposal to free dozens of Israeli hostages in exchange for Palestinian prisoners and a temporary ceasefire in its 7-month war with Israel and Gaza. However, Israel has said that the terms negotiated are not acceptable to it and that it will continue with its plans for a military operation in Rafah. And I was seeing some of the newspaper coverage, some of the radio and TV coverage, particularly the TV coverage, whereby it states there are targeted bombing campaigns in Rafah. And, you know, that gives the impression that they can be discriminate. Well, they can't. Such is the population of that area. The bombing still remains indiscriminate. And I think to call it targeted is a bit of a misnomer. Anyway, according to a statement on Hamas Telegram channel yesterday, Ismail Haniyeh, the Palestinian militant group's Doha-based political leader, told the Qatari premier and Egypt's intelligence chiefs of the Hamas's movement approvals of their proposal regarding the ceasefire. Hamas did not announce the details of the deal it agreed to, but Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said they were far from meeting Israel's demands. He confirmed that the military operation in Rafah would continue, and there were reports that airstrikes continued last night. Indeed, they continued overnight in that very, very confined space that is Palestine, but even more so Rafah, and 100,000 people being asked to move west to the coast, which is effectively asking them just to move on to a tiny beach. On to the Irish Independent now. I'm just reading this one because obviously a lot of people out there talk about carbon tax and what have you, and maybe some of you would not be aware that jet fuel, one of the biggest polluters individually, is exempt from carbon tax. Persistent and well-organised lobbying by airlines has been blamed for the situation where households and motorists in this country are hit hard by carbon taxes, but people flying off on holidays to Spain and Australia escape the tax. It was unfair that a family in the Midlands using kerosene to heat their home was subjected to the tax, but carbon tax does not apply to kerosene used to fuel aeroplanes, energy scientist Paul Dean of University College Cork said. Mr. Dean's comments come days after households were told this month's carbon tax would mean they would have to pay more for their home heating oil, coal and gas. The May 1st rise in carbon tax will add €17 to the annual cost of the average bill for the 600,000 households that use natural gas. The average gas customer will now be paying around €122 a year in total in carbon tax. The increase in the carbon tax will add around €19 to the fill of a 900 litre home heating oil tank. But as I say, there isn't any carbon tax on jet fuel. Now, if there were a carbon tax on jet fuel, those lucky enough to scrape together some money to head abroad would find that their tickets and what have you may be more expensive because the companies are bound to pass that off. So, you know, it's not either or very, very simple. And you know, maybe that might be the breaking point that a hard-pressed family who managed to scrape together a holiday, they couldn't afford the tickets then too. So it's not always plain and simple. On to the Irish Daily Mail now. And the government has been accused of going on holiday and going into hiding as it's failed to address how it will deal with the emergence of a new tent city of migrants just days after the Taoiseach pledged to end the shanty towns. Last Wednesday, the government moved to clear the growing encampment in Mount Street in Dublin city centre of close to 300 asylum seekers. Just days later, though, around 70 tents have been erected along the Grand Canal, only 400 yards from Mount Street, in an illustration of the growing challenge the government is facing. No minister was available to publicly answer questions last night after Taoiseach Simon Harris doubled down on his position that tent encampments would not be allowed in Ireland, but they're certainly not going to be allowed in cities because it's clear that they want to move these tents out of Dublin. But they are looking at government-owned land whereby they'll build tented accommodation outside of Dublin in more rural areas. That's not in the paper, but that's what's being planned. Mr. Harris said, "You can't have a scenario where in a very ad hoc fashion these kind of tented villages are nearly allowed to develop." The Taoiseach also said the removal of hundreds of tents on Mount Street was an important day for the laws of our land because this is a country that does have laws, and as Taoiseach, I expect those laws to be enforced. Yet 400 yards away, a new tented village has emerged. Right, OK, on to the Irish Daily Sun now. And a drug runner was shot to death in a hail of bullets during a Wild West gunfight on a residential street. Gardaí are probing if the young man was killed in the late night gunfire in a Dublin suburb was on the way to bomb a rival. It's just one of the theories investigators are examining after the victim, Josh Israeli, 20, was blasted in the Knocknarea Road area of Drimna at 12:15 yesterday morning. Detectives suspect Israeli, whose family are originally from the Congo in Africa, but who are was born in Ireland and living in Ballyfermot, West Dublin, was in a black Mercedes car which was rammed by a black Volkswagen Golf. And Gardaí since then have found a high-powered weapon in a hedge nearby and they've arrested three individuals, one teen and two in their 20s. This is quite a significant story, I thought, emerging over the weekend, but it doesn't get much coverage in the papers today. Just a small slot inside. Russia last night threatened to strike British military facilities in retaliation for its support for Ukraine. The British ambassador to Moscow, Nigel Casey, was summoned to the foreign ministry in the Russian capital to be given the stark warning. Russia urged him to think about the inevitable catastrophic consequences of such hostile steps. Now, UK has supplied long-range missiles to... the UK has provided long-range missiles to the Ukraine. And Cameron said that they have no objection if they were to strike targets within Russia. So in other words, Britain would be arming the Ukraine to be able to attack Russian soil deep inside Russia. And the Russians have said, well, if you do that, we'll attack your soil. And they've also issued the same warning to France because Macron has said that he's not ruling out French soldiers joining the war on Ukrainian land. So as I say, hopefully nothing will come of it. And there are de-escalation protocols in place and what have you. But David Cameron, certainly in his green light for Ukraine to use these powerful long-range missiles within Russia, certainly could be leaving that country and those around them open to attack from Russia itself. Because there will come a point where Putin will not tolerate such activity. The Irish Daily Star, finally, 1 in 10 people, 10% of Irish people, believe a conspiracy theory that a small secret group of people is responsible for making all major decisions in world politics. The data released by the Electoral Commission, the state body that oversees elections and referendums, also found 24% said the statement was probably true, while a further 20% said they were not sure. So 34% of people in Ireland are open to the idea that a very small, secretive group of people are responsible for making all major decisions in world politics. 20%, of other 20%, could be convinced of same because they're not sure at the moment. Well, nearly a quarter declared it was definitely not true, while another 22% said it was probably not true. The findings are contained in the Ireland's first pilot National Election and Democracy Study came from two surveys that were carried out by Red Sea along with an exit poll from Ipsos BNA. The only thing is about polls, I've got to the point now at this stage, is that I actually, maybe they're good to talk about and what have you, but I'm not sure they're worth the paper they're written on any longer. But anyway, that one might ring true. Now, we're joined in studio by Mary McDermott, who is a link worker at the Lifford Conlee Resource Centre. Good morning to you, and thanks so much for joining us, Mary.
Good morning, Greg, and thanks for the opportunity.
Before we talk really about the core reason we invited you in, and that's the future of the centre and its services, perhaps you could give us an idea of some of the work that's done out of the centre.
Yeah, that'd be great. So back in 1991, it was basically a group of people, residents in Crone Heights, came together in a kitchen and decided they needed to do something for the young people of the area. And in 1995, the centre was opened. And from then, it has grown really from strength to strength. It now has attached to the ABC Childcare Centre with 88 children there and hoping to go to full daycare now in September time. Every day, there's a variety of things. We have Tuesday club, an over 50s club, a Friday club. We have karate, Irish dancing, jiving. We have a woman's group. We have Lover Tots. We have an art class. We have English classes, computer classes. So it depends what day you come into the centre.
Not much going on then, really.
No, not a lot.
Quite enough.
there's some days there's actually a group waiting in the reception area to get the room free.
So from a little acorn then, it's become the oak that is the heart and soul of the community then, by the sounds of things. It's the local community resource for all these fantastic activities and clubs and what have you.
Yeah, that's right. And in the Lifford Conlee area, and what we would say is, even if you don't use the centre, some of your family would use the centre or your friends, or you'll know people that do use the centre.
What are the facilities like? What have you got there?
Yeah, well, it's a one-story building, and there's a couple of large training rooms. There's a full computer suite there, and there's the nice sort of the wooden floors for like the jiving and the Irish dancing and the karate. We have a kitchen facility, and we have an AstroTurf, and the AstroTurf has been newly developed there just in the last year and with a new fence around it. And we would do children's birthday parties as well, so they can get use of the AstroTurf and of the big room and the kitchen, so they can bring in their own food.
Yeah, and as you talk of it, people are going to recognise this type of facility because they're dotted around the country, aren't they? And they become really very, the county, become very important to the local area. How is all of this funded? So in terms of sort of the new fence that went around the Astro pitch and maintaining the building and establishing what's there right now, how has that all been funded up until now?
Well, over the for the last 13 years, we've got no core funding. So we would generate about 35,000 per year. The AstroTurf is a big fundraiser because all weekday nights from 5 to 10, there's teams in there and they basically hand over their euros to get the use of that. The birthday parties as well would generate some funding. And then the rent of rooms, the rent of space. So for the karate classes, they would rent space, the jiving classes, the Irish dancing. We link with the HSE and the ETB and they would rent out spaces during the day for like the English classes. Or we have the speech therapist comes there, the dietitian comes, the smoking cessation comes. So we do have the small bits of rent coming in, and that totals about 35K. But when you take in your, you know, your rent and your rates and your maintenance and all of your overheads, you're really sort of clutching at straws.
You're running standstill, really, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely.
Now, throw into the mix that the coordinator that's currently in situ is retiring.
Yeah.
What's the implications of that?
Well, it's massive because Breed Foley has been there for over 20 years now, and she really has done Trojan work. And Breed has such links and is so familiar with everything. She has been able to work on a reduced timetable, and she reduced her hours down every year. And this last year, she's actually been working on 9 hours a week. And to expect somebody to come in new and to take up the gauntlet and work as the coordinator, and it's all new to them, that's not going to happen or be feasible.
Yeah, because even if you were to pay someone €20 an hour, if that were possible, it's who's going to put in that level of commitment that's required for 180 euro a week.
Yes, and you know, they're going to have to make up and establish all their own networks and links and meet with people. The people that Breed knows, you know, who to lift the phone to, she knows who to send the email. You know, she's in the mix and networking, but now she's come to retire.
Yeah.
And
I think this is a testament to her in that really this is a new dawn, potentially or hopefully, and not a new sunset, in that moving forward, you believe there needs to be something else put in place. When I say you, I mean those that you represent as well, of course.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And of course it is, the centre is a charitable, has charitable status, so it's run by a voluntary board of management. So Breed has always been that link person between, like, my job's funded by the HSE and there's a small bit of rent paid to the resource centre to allow me to sit within the community. But so it's not my role to go to the board of management. Breed's links in with me. I get supervision from Breed, and same with all the other people that are there. And then she is able to feed back to the board of management what's going on and look after things like governance and health and safety and HR and all of those other things, and also apply for pockets of funding. There's funding available, Greg, like we got our fence fixed and you can apply for funding for that, like a one-off. We got ramps put in, a new door, you know, to make it more accessible.
But in and of itself, as well as the just day-to-day running, that is a job in and of itself.
You see, this is it.
It's a very labour-intensive activity.
Oh, definitely. And for all the funding that you apply for, you only get a portion of it. Mm. And it's a lot of time and very time-consuming actually applying and actually even researching and knowing where the funding streams are. Mm.
Is it easy or is it possible to put a figure of core funding that would be sort of, you know, an annual, say it was locked in, a level of funding that would secure where we're at now and sort of facilitate potential growth?
Yeah, well, Breed has done that and she has it down, very finely tuned, and it's a minimum of 20,000. So if we had 20,000 of an annual grant, that would secure the future.
Which is, I mean, significant, right? But it's also insignificant in the wider scale of things.
That's it. It's not a lot of money.
Where would that money likely come from? Who would be, which department or body is it most likely that money might come from? Is it the HSE? Is it a different part of government? Is community group? I don't know.
We're hoping that the local councillors, and that's why we're having this event on Thursday, we're hoping that our local councillors would be able to help us and that pot of funding. And again, Lufford is the county town. We're sitting in the county town. If the resource centre wasn't there, there's not a lot else there for people. You know, it's a massive resource.
So are you saying if they were to, there's a discretionary fund they have.
Yeah.
I don't know. What is it? 20,000 at the moment?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure, right? Well, we'll check that out.
Yeah.
But if, you know, four or five of them committed, if elected, to allocate this money to this centre.
Yes,
Then that would be effectively gifting this centre for the community for at least the term of that 5 years.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Or it could come under, you know, a sort of a broader health and well-being of the community. It could come under, you know, just community regeneration. You know, there's different headings. And we could also use the money to fund the post if they want to do, because sometimes people, I think, are afraid to fund a post because with funding an actual job comes lots of other responsibilities. Whereas if we had the money to fund the maintenance and the general upkeep and all your overheads, and those, of course, are all increasing just every month, everything is going up and up and up, then, you know, we have that 35K there and we're willing to sort of work it.
Exactly. But someone who can commit more time, then presumably, hopefully, could grow that
this
revenue.
Is it. Yes, of course.
And then become self-sufficient. Yeah.
And of course, you need somebody with that skill set and somebody that knows the centre and somebody that knows the area and has their eye on the ball and has their eye on the funding, the other streams of funding.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be dramatic, but there's always comes a point whereby, you know, you either get what you're looking for or things begin to unravel.
Yeah.
So is there a window of opportunity here? Like, are we on a cliff edge? I'm sorry, as I say, using all these dramatic metaphors, but yeah, was there a time frame here, really, for the future of the centre and its services?
We're just not at the cliff edge yet, Greg, and that's why we're trying. And Breed, although she's retiring, you know, she's been very proactive in this and she's trying to secure that there's a sort of a legacy left there. We do have some reserves and we're hoping that within the next year, 18 months, that we will be able to secure the funding. And I suppose we're looking at now as an opportunity with the local elections coming up to get everybody in the room. We've invited all the local council representatives. We've invited all the people from the different community groups. We've done a lot of work to do with photographs and getting different people from the different areas that use the centre, with a sign saying, you know, support us. And that's what we're looking for, is the support.
Mm-hmm.
So that we don't get to that where we're on a cliff edge. I mean, the centre's not at risk of closing. We want to put that out there, that for people that use it, we're not at risk of closing yet. But I suppose what I would say is, having been on the board of management of a school, I was chairperson of that board for 12 years, and you have a principal. If you don't have the principal coming to you as the board, yes, all the teachers are there doing their work, the caretaker's there doing his work, the admin are there doing their work, but who's reporting to the board? Yeah. Who's that link? Yeah. And that's what the coordinator or the manager of the centre is.
Of course, and there's yes. principals in every school for a reason, because
yes,
they're required.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, okay. And it's the same with our centre. You need that link. And they do even then more than that, because you're not going to sit in a voluntary board if you're not getting the information back of what's happening in the centre. So it's very, very important, and it's a very specific skill set as well.
Mm-hmm.
And as you pointed out, then they're the person then that will look for the other revenue mm-hmm. and the other streams of funding.
Yeah. So, I mean, I mentioned, you know, funds that are available to councillors, but you want them to come together, presumably on Thursday in advance and beyond that. And sort of see if there are any other revenue streams in the council that can be tapped into, or any assistance that can be offered, or signposting.
Yeah.
You really just want those elected and those seeking election to get behind the centre and its future.
Yeah, and to support us. And at home yesterday, actually, there was somebody came around canvassing to my door, and I don't live in the Lifford-Clonley area, but I brought it up with them. And they end up thanking me because they didn't know. So we don't want people not knowing. We want people to know, be it in the community or be it people standing now for election. Because if we can get everybody in the room, and there might be a pot of funding there that we're not aware of, because we're all busy working in the community. Yeah. We're all busy doing what we do. And we're not sort of expert on the funding. Or maybe it's now for the council to realise, oh, wait a minute, we need to set money aside for
and
this.
Look, there is this. I'm not pitching one area against the other. Yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of money goes around the place, and some would feel that maybe, you know, it would be no harm for a bit of positive discrimination in the Lifford direction. This could be a conversation about trying to establish something like this, which would be a bloody nightmare.
Yeah.
It's there, it's established, it's set up. This is about funding it to maintain and grow it.
Yeah.
Like, so I mean, it shouldn't be too tough a nut to crack, I don't think, Mary.
No, that's it. And all they have to do is look back as far as 1991 and see the amount of work, and for the past 13 years, what has actually been achieved with no core funding.
Okay, so this meeting is taking place in the Lifford-Clonley Resource Centre on Thursday.
Yep.
That's the day after tomorrow at 12 noon. Invitations have gone out, but if anyone missed the invitation that has a skin in the game here, you want them there.
And even listening this morning, and I know it's a bit of a moving target who's standing for election now and nominations.
We're trying to get our stuff organised.
Yeah, I mean, the nominations haven't opened yet for people to be... You know,
I think
put forward in that.
Is the deadline.
So if anybody's
and
thinking of
got,
that.
Then they've got, I think it's 12 days to change their mind.
So that's it. So again, we're not all au fait with that. So everybody is welcome. Everybody in the community is welcome. We have put out the invitations by email and post to those who we are aware of that are already elected or intending on standing.
And for those, as I said, there are a number of similar type areas. Maybe someone, these types of facilities in other areas, maybe someone involved in one in a different area has some insight as well.
Yeah, you see, some of the other resource centres, you know, there's very few that are just a resource centre, not a family resource centre.
Yeah.
Family resource centres get different funds a stream. You know, they can get funding.
I get you, right, understood.
But when you are a resource centre, you're sort of a bit...
Caller says, they're too late in applying now, especially in an election year. I'd say the money is gone. Getting money to pay for a staff member is not that easy. Well, you recognise that straight away.
Yep.
But you actually, whenever funding windows open or close...
Yep.
This is not like we've talked about things in the past whereby they could face closure in a couple of weeks. There are some resources here.
Yeah, and we have some reserves
that can bridge to funding streams opening.
Yeah, it's just the two things have come together, our coordinator retiring and the elections coming up. So we sort of put a wee committee together and we thought, right, let's be proactive with this. And that's, as you said, let's not wait till we're on the cliff edge.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Right. Okay, good stuff. Well, I mean, obviously, you have been proactive over the course of the lifetime of this brilliant centre and continue to be so. Right, so that meeting is in the Lifford-Clonley Resource Centre. Is it open to the public as
it
well?
It is, yeah.
Okay,
yep,
and it's on Thursday at 12 noon.
Yep.
And Mary McDermott, link worker at the Lifford-Clonley Resource Centre. I hope common sense prevails. I'm sure, I know that the base figure is 20, but why not more than that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think Lifford area particularly deserves it.
Yeah.
Because other areas are very, very well resourced as well. All right, Mary, thank you.
Thanks very much for the opportunity.
Is there anything else you want to mention whilst you're in?
No, just maybe thank you to Breach Foley for all the Trojan work she has done over the past. And the board of management as well, who are voluntary and give up their time on a voluntary basis.
Brilliant stuff, Mary, and fair play to you as well. I'm sure they'll be very pleased on how the way you've advocated on their behalf. Mary McDermott, link worker at Lifford Clonlea Resource Centre. To some of the comments coming in so far this morning, this listener says, on Sunday evening, I was driving along Conwall Graveyard where I witnessed a bus pulled in. You've heard this one before. About 30 men were out urinating against the wall. This is a sacred place. They had their beer bottles lined up on the wall. It was shocking and sickening. The disrespect I felt for what they were doing was horrific. If I did this on the main street, I'd be arrested. When I mentioned this to others over the weekend, they say they've seen this particular bus company stop there on several occasions, allowing the people on board to use the wall as a public toilet. Please tell me what I can do about this bus company. I do not have photos, just my eyewitness account of what happened. I'm so angry about it. Well, I suppose in the first instance, and we don't like to be confrontational, but I would say put it in an email and say, you know, I saw, it's very possible the bus company does not know what's going on. Say, I saw on Sunday one of your buses parked, just effectively forward on that what you've sent us to them and see what response you get from the bus company. And if you want to CC us in that, we can check up with them as well. I think most people, I think everyone understand people are off on a stag or whatever it might be. And, you know, nature calls, especially if they're having a few drinks and all that kind of stuff. And we're not so prudish that we don't know that's happening. And, you know, hopefully people will be discreet and all that type of stuff. But it is, if you've got a loved one in that graveyard, it is, I think most people would say there has to be somewhere else that feels disrespectful. And maybe if you let the company know, they might respond in a positive way to you. A caller says there's a serious burst to the water main at the cyclist's rest in Farn. Unfortunately, that means the water will be out in Inch Island, Maharbeg and Tuban. No estimated time for the return of service. I think there might be scheduled power outages in that area today as well, or in and around that area. So it could be a double hit for some people. Right, let's go to Kathleen, who's joining us now on line one. Hi, Kathleen.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for taking the call this morning and taking the time.
No, it's important. You are from the Rann-Lestac Road area. And just talk to us, well, you can talk to us a little bit about, there was a public meeting held recently, wasn't there?
Yes, there was a public meeting last Tuesday night. Unfortunately, due to work commitments, I wasn't able to attend the meeting. It wasn't in any other reason, but it's probably about maybe nearly 3 months ago, yourself and the station highlighted this problem that we have on this road. It's a very, very busy thoroughfare since the main road has been put into action, the main Letterkenny to Manor Cunningham Road with lights and everything else. An awful lot of people are using it as a cut-through, which is understandable whenever there's a backlog in other places with traffic. We appreciate that. That's not really what I'm controversial about. It's the state of the road itself. The engineers said they would look into it, the council would look into it. Now, I got a text message from another council member, which I'm not going to say who the person was at all. That was about 3 weeks ago, telling me that signage was ordered, road upkeep would be, service would be sorted in the very near future. Now, as we know, Greg, there's an election coming up. And unless we get something done before the election, no disrespect, they won't do anything after the election unless we keep cheaping.
Now,
and I'm sorry to say that I'm going to keep cheaping.
No, I know exactly what you're saying. Keep tweeting away, as they say. Kathleen, and the thing is, too, if people are using this sort of as a workaround of slower traffic, they're probably the type of driver that's heavy-footed as well, too. At least some of them. I'm not painting everyone with the same brush, don't get me wrong. So can you describe the increase in traffic since the main road changes?
Like the thing about this here is, Greg, that about 10 years ago, the council put a tracker on the road for to catch the volume of the traffic. this is something that you highlighted for me in our last conversation, that I was the Warrens in looking to see that they would know the volume that they were dealing with. Mm. They haven't come back with it. They haven't contacted anybody, or they haven't. Now, I'm not sure of the engineer on this stretch of the road. I'm not 100%. I think the gentleman's name is Michael Wee, because he's at Letterkenny's side. It's not Balbafay side.
He might not exist. I have responsibility for somewhere else altogether.
I know what you mean. That's why I'm saying I'm not sure. But he's bound to be aware of it, because the publicity that this road is getting, Facebook, general public, there's been not many accidents. The guards have been out on a few occasions. Do you know what I mean? It's not something that they're not aware of. Mm-hmm. So is it just that they're closing their eyes and not deciding to answer the general public? You asked me traffic, volume traffic. I left where I live, which is on one of the junctions, to go into Dunn Stores one evening there. Now, this wasn't peak time. Shortly after 4 o'clock, and from I left to I got to Dunn Stores, I met 59 cars in a space of 6 kilometres coming out of the town.
Yeah, that's significant.
So that's a volume of traffic. It's just ongoing, ongoing, ongoing.
Now what
and I know people
Kathleen,
were giving.
I know this talk. Like, what is the sort of consensus in the community, if one exists, as to what would do? Do you know what I mean? Like, in terms of road safety, road improvements. I mean, you might put signs up. Are signs going to be heeded? Or maybe that would be enough. Like, is there, and you can't block the road off for local access only. We all know that, of course, Kathleen. So,
What is
the sort of sense that would improve the safety and situation?
Well, for one thing, Greg, my personal view on it, that there is a few very bad bends. And if them bends were taken off, at least, you know what I mean, this is on this junction where they're talking about that people go off the road. It is a very serious junction, you know what I mean? It's a Y junction per se, but the problem is that you're coming up from the Letterkenny side to go to Drumkeen. You don't see the car coming until they're on the corner in front of you. And 90% of the time, they're in the middle of the road. It's people that, as you said possibly earlier on, were slightly heavy-footed. Not everybody is. You know what I mean? You're aware of the road, you slow down. You have to slow down because you meet people coming and they are going too fast.
Yeah, okay.
And that's it. But
right,
the road surface itself, Greg, sorry, just to interrupt you there.
No, it's fine.
The road surface itself is ridiculous. It has got seriously, seriously worse. It's at the stage now that I'm going to take pictures of the road surface and put them up on Facebook, because there's been a few people nearly went in, caught the grass, and there's nothing there.
Mm.
You're just pure moss. It's crisis point. Somebody is going to get killed, and then they will do something. And that's just the way it stands at the minute.
Well, we don't need that, do we? And as well, we've talked about it before.
I really don't.
With a bank holiday, a long weekend, holiday weekend, there's traffic on that road that isn't actually familiar with the road either. So whatever about local knowledge, there's people going up and down that road that have no clue of some of those dangerous junctions.
Yeah.
As I say, you know, you've been screaming this. Go ahead, Kathleen.
Sorry, we have a rally coming in now to the town in the next month. Do you know what I mean? That's just more fun and games on top of the ordinary Joe Soap that uses the road anyway. You know what I mean? The rally is marvellous for the town. It brings a lot of infrastructure to the town. I agree with that. But unless this road is sorted and sorted ASAP, somebody is going to be killed. It is dangerous, beyond dangerous.
Okay.
Critical.
Now, where's the public meeting
Thank
tonight?
You for taking the call.
When and where's the public meeting, Kathleen?
The public meeting tonight is up at Coravaggi itself. It's on the second car park on the left-hand side. If you're going out of Letterkenny, people are bound to be aware of it because it's only a new car park done up by the council, which is fabulous too, at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
Now, anybody is welcome to attend the meeting. Anybody and everybody. Councillors, whatever. I don't care, as long as they turn up and somebody does something about this road ASAP. It's no longer a joke. It's dangerous.
Okay, that's loud and clear. Thank you very much indeed. Five collisions on that road already, and the sense locally is that it's only a matter of time before there's a fatality, and God forbid that were to happen, maybe all of a sudden things would start being done. And I think what locals are saying is forewarned is forearmed. This is the same road we've spoken, you know, effectively Old Town to Drumkeen. I think those from outside the area might know that road a bit better as, you know. So there you go. Hi, sorry for troubling you, and it's never a trouble, so never apologise, this listener says, but I'm looking for a little garden clay and thought maybe some of your listeners could help me. I'm from Ahayarn and not sure how to go about getting it. Many thanks. That comes in from Lynn. So where might Lynn from the Ahayarn area get garden clay? So someone out there is bound to know, and I know they'll get in touch with us, and we really do appreciate it. Staying with the roads here, regarding the new four lane in Letterkenny, I saw three cyclists cycling on the road, and there's a brand new cycle lane right beside them. They're actually breaking the law. Section 14, paragraph 3 of the Road Traffic Act states that a cycle lane has to be used if it's provided. Well, I've asked this question really quite specifically of the Gardaí, because it's one that comes up all the time, and apparently there's no compulsion for people who are cycling to use a cycle path. And often, if the truth be told, some of these bikes, very, you know, big wheels, very thin wheels, some of these cycle paths probably wouldn't be suitable for those vehicles at the speed they travel. So I'm not quite sure, though. You've quoted a section of the law, but the Gardaí, the law told me before that they're not obliged to use them, though they're recommended to do so. Upgrading the A5, that says this caller, is not the issue. I travelled it this morning and a haulage company passed me absolutely flying, then cutting in on top of me. The issue with this road is speed, they say, and nothing else. Okay, allow all asylum seekers who've escaped from Britain temporary passports, then give them the offer and support them all they want on the return to Britain. Mad idea, but would it be legal, though, asks the caller. Hi, I have a question for your show. Why was carbon tax applied to smokeless coal yesterday? 90 cent per 40 kilogram bag. I didn't know that. It's not yesterday, by the way. That's a text that came in a couple of days ago. Oh, okay. Apparently, according to the listener, carbon tax went on smokeless coal. That would be seemingly counterintuitive, would it be? Right, you're tuned to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. Our contact details are as follows. If you want to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. If you want to WhatsApp or text, it's 086 60 25 000. And if you want to send in your WhatsApp voice notes, you can do so to that number too. And if you want to give us a call, it's 074 91 25 000. We're joined on the programme now by the leader of the Ain't Two Party, Deputy Padder Tobin, also a candidate in the European elections for Midlands North West. Good morning to you, Padder. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. How are you doing?
Doing good. So how does that work? Sorry, before we get into the nitty-gritty, how does that work in terms of, you know, people voted to elect you to the Dáil? Now you're saying the Dáil's not good enough. I want to go to Europe.
What we're saying is that only Aim2 are listening to the people at the moment. A lot of the other political parties are in a political bubble. And if Aim2 is not at the table in terms of this debate, the real issues affecting people simply won't be discussed. So the reason I'm contesting this election is to crowbar the issues affecting the people into the political debate and the discourse. And,
but you're seeking a seat. You're seeking a seat, and you would take it, presumably, would you?
Or
would
we are seeking a seat, and you know we've very clearly stated though that we are going to stand. I am going to stand in the next general election, so people know up front exactly what we're doing. All the other political parties do this, Greg.
Matt Carthy did it. Matt Carthy did it so long ago. I think
we're being up front, and we're telling people exactly what we're aiming to do. I think that the referendums recently have shown that there is a political bubble in this country, and we aim to burst it. And by standing in the election, that's what we hope to
do. So just to be clear, if you get one of the five seats, the European seats, you don't take it then? Do you nominate? So I don't know. How does that work? It's that long since we've done it.
The objective is to take the seats, and then if a general election comes by, we would select a replacement at that stage. Matt Carthy did it for Sinn Féin. I think Patrick Gallagher did it for Fianna Fáil. Simon Coveney did it for Fine Gael. So it's a practice that's, you know, very common, not just in Ireland, but right through Europe as well. And, you know, because politics are not just about individuals, they're also about ideas. And Aim2 is unique in the approach that we're taking to politics in Ireland at the moment. We're a party that believes, you know, we should be listening to people, not ignoring the people. And we should make sure that the Dáil is, you know, a place where the issues of the people are discussed, and the European Union is a place where Ireland is put first. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, that the MPs are representatives of the Irish people in Europe, not representatives of Europe in Ireland.
Right. Now, a county-by-county breakdown of Ukrainian refugees and applicants for international protection, we covered it over the weekend. It shows the distribution of migrants taken in each area of the country. Kerry, which we knew had taken a large amount, it turns out it has taken the largest amount of Ukrainians. And the top three county areas where Ukrainian refugees are accommodated are Kerry, 6,195, Donegal, 3,956, and then Cork. 1,913 international protection applicants in Donegal. So that's close on 6,000 between Ukrainian refugees and IPAS. Why has Donegal been why has so many been accommodated in Donegal? And some would say, why has Donegal been asked to do 2.5 times its fair share?
Yeah, so Donegal is 2.5 times the average amount at the moment. But also, if you look at it on a per capita basis, Donegal is taking 20 times the amount of a constituency or a local authority, such as Dunlera, Rathdown, for example. So that means that on the basis of the information that Aintu received, that the distribution of especially Ukrainians is completely imbalanced. And that has a significant downstream effect on incomes. Fáilte Ireland has said that, you know, non-accommodation providers in tourism have lost 1.1 billion euros in revenues last year. So that's downstream tourism businesses, you know, are losing their incomes as a result of the accommodation being used. And they've also stated that about a third of all tourism stock outside of Dublin is now contracted by the state, which is massive. And while you would imagine that that would be acceptable in a crisis situation, it can't be acceptable in a long-term situation. And I think we're entering into, you know, the crisis situation. The short term has passed. We're now in the medium term. And this looks like it's going to stretch out into the long term as well. And if you look at Dublin, Dublin has 12,000 empty properties at the moment. So it does not make sense to us that we have this complete imbalance in the distribution.
We also see a situation where if you read between the lines, it seems that from Simon Harris's comments that they want to move even those international protection applicants that are in tented accommodation out of the capital, really, and into more rural state-owned lands to build tented villages there. Like, if you look at the map, and I'm not anti anything, I'll be completely honest with you, but if you look at the map, it is there seems to have been the West Coast has been targeted as accommodation opportunity. I'm not saying that's because it's very far from Dublin. I don't know what the motivation might be. Of course, there's going to be, you know, there's going to be spare accommodation there for tourism because the West of Ireland is so beautiful. Don't get me wrong. But why is, when I look at a shaded map, why is the entire West Coast a much darker tone than the Midlands, for an example?
Yeah, I think that's a question that the government has to answer, to be honest. But I do think that it has something got to do with the fact that we have most of the political power in Dublin. 40% of the ministers in this country, junior and senior level, live in County Dublin. Even though that has County Dublin has about 28% of the population. There is in Dunlera Rathdown, the constituency, Dublin Rathdown, the constituency, there are 4 TDs and all of them are ministers. And in 10 counties on the west coast of Ireland, there's no minister at all. So first of all, we know that the decisions are made by those at the cabinet table and that there's most of the power is based in Dublin, and I would even say South Dublin. And that is a difficulty. And one of the things I have to say does annoy me on this is, first of all, it's important to say that many migrants make positive contributions in our society too. And it's important to say that, you know, it's not all necessarily a burden. You know, many of our hospitals and nursing homes and other businesses are working because of the fact that we have many positive contributing migrants. But it does annoy me, especially when we see this, the Dublin-based media sometimes look down on counties like Donegal, Galway, and Donegal when people complain or push back in terms of migration. And yet it's those counties that are actually, you know, taking biggest burden. But in a way,
if the amounts had been spread more fairly or equally, an awful lot of the ill will wouldn't be there right now. Because it's not about the colour of someone's skin or where they're from. what agitates people is that they can't get accommodation themselves. They can't get a GP's appointment. They're struggling to get into hospitals. They don't. Now, some people will use, you know, quite emotive and harmful and racist language, right? But your average person, it's not the individual or where they're from. It's like, well, you know, we're so overstretched here. This is impacting on our lives. So this has been almost generated because if there was a fairer spread, there'd be less pressure on places like Donegal. But in the last couple of minutes, and I wish I'd allowed more time, what's AIM2's proposals or solutions to this? Because I get the FOIs, right? And I get the getting the information out here, and that's really useful. But you're looking to get into a position of influence, a position of decision-making. So what does AIM2 do?
Yeah, so the first point is there's definitely a mismanagement of the whole immigration system by this country. There's no doubt about that. We're the ones that raised that 85% of people who came to this country and then had their asylum application refused, who received a deportation order, were never deported. We're the ones that raised the fact that 5,000 people came through Dublin Airport without a passport or a travel document last year. We're the party that found out that 75% of people coming into the country at the moment are not even asked how they got into the country. And we raised that 2 years ago.
But you don't want to be the minister. You don't want to be the minister for revelations. It's great work that's being done.
No.
What's the solution?
Our policy is we have to have a stricter migration system. We have to have a system whereby if your application does not succeed, you are deported. That you have to come into the country with a travel document. And that you're asked how you come into the country. And, you know, that we have a system which pushes back in terms of people who might be coming into the country for other reasons rather than humanitarian reasons, and that there has to be an equal distribution of migrants across the whole other 26 counties, depending on geography and population size. Because, you know, what's happening is there are definitely areas with less political representation, less ministerial representation, and they are taking on the biggest burden, and that's not fair.
All right, OK, thanks. As always, I appreciate your time. That was AIM2 leader, Deputy Padder Tobin, also a candidate in the European elections for Midlands North West, but he's still going to contest the general election. So the idea being if they secure a seat, someone else would be appointed into that seat if he was successful then in the Dáil elections. It's not unusual. It has been done before. That's not a commentary from me on whether it's right or wrong. I'm just saying it's not precedent setting. All right, it is the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio, and we look forward to coming back after the news and obituary notices with more great features for you.